If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
In this episode of Mind Pump, we answer fitness and health questions. We actually answer four of them. And then at the beginning of the episode, we do our introductory conversation where we talk about current events, talk about our lives. Sometimes we mention sponsors, but we do always have a lot of fun.
Always.
Here's what we talked about in this episode. We start out by talking about overly friendly friends. You know, hey. When you got those friends that hug your wife for too long. What's wrong with you, bro?
Yeah, stop tickling her.
Then I talked about my brother becoming the best chili pad salesman I've ever seen in my entire life. He was at my family function telling everybody about how awesome
runs in the family, huh?
The chili pad is. Now, chili pads are pads you put on your bed, and they use water, circulating water, to either warm or cool your mattress. You set the temperature, and that's the temperature it stays at all night long. And there's two sides. You can even do one for your husband or wife and one for yourself, dramatically improving your sleep quality. It's very quiet, very, very low EMF because it uses water. It's an amazing product, and we have a massive discount for you. If you go to chilitechnology.com, chili spelled with C-H-I-L-I and then technology.com/mindpump, use the code on the page for the Mind Pump discount. Then we talked about Walmart and how they're going to start challenging Amazon pretty soon. That's going to be interesting, which led us to talk about Jeff Bezos and how he donated $1 million for the fire
that asshole
in Australia. And people complain that he donated $1 million. So funny.
Yeah, crazy.
Then we talked about Nike and how one of their shoes got banned in races because it makes people too fast. Mm. I'm going to buy a pair later. And we talked about living robots. Scientists actually have created robots out of living cells. I think I've seen this movie before. It doesn't end very well.
Yeah.
Then Justin brought up military animals. I don't know if you knew this or not, but the military actually trains animals to find bombs. And in the past, we've trained animals to drop bombs and kill people. Kind of
bat
crazy.
Bomb. Nah, 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 nah.
Then I talked about a recent study showing how women are far less likely to receive CPR when they need it than men. And then Adam talked about Taco Bell and how they're going to be paying their managers lots of money.
That's maybe cool. Pay money for the quality.
Then we got into the fitness questions. Here was the first one. This person wants to know if it's better to lower the weight, to lower the reps and increase the weight by a lot, or to increase the weights by a little bit every time they work out. Next question. This person's having a tough time losing weight. Is it because they have a slow metabolism, or are they just eating too much food? We answered that question. The next one was, is it not a good idea to eat or not eat after my workout? If I don't eat after my workout, does it slow down my progress? So we tackle that whole thing about post-workout food. And the final question, this person works in construction, wants to know what they can do to help prevent lower back pain because of all the activity they do at work. Also, this month, MAPS HIT is 50% off. This is by far one of our most popular programs. Now, HIT stands for High Intensity Interval Training. This style of training is short and intense, and it burns more body fat in a shorter period of time than any other workout. So this is one of our best fat-burning workouts that we have. Again, it's really popular, gives you all the exercises, the demos, the videos, everything's in there. Everything that you need is in there. The program's half off. Here's how you get the discount. Go to mapshit.com. That's M-A-P-S-H-I-I-T.com. Use the code HIT50 for the discount. That's HIIT50, no space, for that discount. So, Justin, you were telling me you have a buddy that just hugs your wife too hard or too long.
Yeah, don't you guys have one of those? Like, I feel like everybody knows a guy like that.
Yeah,
right?
I do. His name is Adam.
Yeah. I'm a long hugger.
Only for our girls.
Yeah, only the wives, right?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Knows right away if they've been working out consistently.
Yeah. Like, really? Are you paying that much attention?
Wow, look at your hamstrings. Let me touch them.
Oh, wow.
No, you know what, though? The guys that you probably shouldn't worry about are the ones that are, you know,
forward like
friendly
that.
In front
like
of you.
In your face.
I'll flirt with you, girl, right in front of you.
Right in front of you.
Yeah.
But that's a compliment.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Right. Yeah, that's a compliment. It's complimentary, especially if you're not insecure, because I'm not insecure. I don't care. I think it's, you know, great.
Yeah. Right.
But it's when you're not around.
If you're trying to hit outside your league, you know, like you should just expect that.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you guys ever had a buddy like that though, where you're just like, wait a minute.
Yeah. I've definitely had that. And it like literally picked like Courtney up in front of me and like twirls her around and like hugs her real tight. And I was like, what are you doing, dude? like okay, like I understand the twirl, the hug, but then this,
the pickup hug is one thing. Like, yeah, the twirl on. Is like over the top.
Yeah, like she's leaving the ground now. Like where else are we going?
That's him being insecure. I had one time. This is back when I was married to my ex-wife. We went to Italy, and she lived there for a little while when she was I don't know, between 13 and 16. So she had old friends or whatever. We go there, and this dude comes over who was friends with her back in the day, and I speak Sicilian a little bit. I don't really speak Italian super, super well, especially if it's fast, conversational. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to understand most of it. And this dude completely ignored me and spoke really fast just to her, and it was like I wasn't in the room. So about 45 minutes into the conversation, I said, hey, I said, you need to include me in the conversation because otherwise I'm going to kick your ass. And he goes, huh? I don't understand. And then my ex-wife looks at me like, I'm like, can you translate to him what I just said?
You need an interpreter, buddy? Yeah. Or can you read my body language?
Yeah, I was a little younger.
I used to give my buddies the green light. The rule was, though, that you had to tell me before she did. So that's the deal. Mm-hmm. Like, if you get after my girl, that's cool. Just, game I want to, you got to tell me, though.
Beforehand. Yeah. Like, man, I tried to flirt with your girl.
No, I slept with her. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, shit.
Yeah, we're cool if you tell me. But if, like, you don't tell me, like, you're in trouble. You know what I'm saying? Like, I have a problem. Because the way I look at it is, like,
well, it's more on her than him.
Exactly. If my boy comes out, if I was dating a beautiful girl, right, that everybody or all my friends
control himself. Right,
it's not even a matter of controlling himself. If she's gonna give in like that to my boy, my boy, she's gonna do it with anybody else. So I'd much rather
that's a cancer you want to extract.
I'd rather my buddy figure it out and then come to me and say, "Yo, hey, you know the girl you're sprung on right now, and you think she's all great and everything." We hooked up last night.
I'll tell you what though, dude.
So you're like, thanks for doing me a solid.
Right, yeah. That's how I would look at it.
Yeah,
right?
No, I don't look at it that way. I think both ways is shitty. I mean, you're really friends with someone and you do that and you go out, you know, if you came to me and said, hey man, I gotta tell you something, dude, like your girl, I think she wants to like hook up with me, that's different than, oh, I hooked up with her last night. I'm like, you went through with it?
Yeah, right.
Wow.
Yeah, that tells a whole nother
story. You are a pure shithead.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I don't know. I'm okay with
it. Kinda,
you must have done that to someone.
No.
And I was like, why? What's the big deal?
I don't think so. I don't think so. That was like the bro rule, right? With all of us guys. It was just, you know, if she would
But what if it's like your wife, like your girl? Well, that's different. You're talking about girls you were just not married.
Come on, I'm the guy who's not married, right? I wouldn't marry a chick that I wasn't sure that she wouldn't do something.
Yeah, I think you would have vetted at that point.
Right, exactly. Like Katrina's been in enough situations like that already that I know she's a solid chick. So, you know, that I wouldn't – I'm not the guy who falls in love in 6 months and gets married a year later and then finds out like, oh, shit, she's the type that –
I don't know about this.
Yeah. Right?
No, but, dude, I've heard stories – I know people personally who – like couples where the wife or the husband, you know, was cheating – and it was a complete like shock, right? You know, like, and I know the people very well, and I know, and they obviously the spouse knows them very well, and it's crazy how that can happen where you just get totally blindsided. It hurts, it crushes people. I have a friend right now who that happened to. She found out her husband was fooling around, and he they were trying for a baby. During the whole process, got her pregnant, still did it, and got caught. And then now on top of it, I'm going to do a little rant here just in case he's listening because he deserves it. Here's the thing that I'm very, very understanding because I don't know the whole situation, right? I mean, not always, but sometimes when somebody leaves a relationship, they're not the first one to leave. In other words, just cheating isn't the only way you can leave a relationship.
Right. I agree with that.
You know, maybe there was a bad relationship or whatever. There's a lot of stuff leading up to it.
And I would actually speculate that more often than not, that's the case.
Probably.
I mean, there's, of course.
You know, like the husband who completely ignores his wife.
Yeah, there's dogs in the world for sure.
Yeah.
But I know the one time that I've been cheated on, and I remember people, like we were in 2 years together. It was the first and only time that I know of, right, that happened to me. You know, of course it stung and I was upset and we ended things right away. But I wasn't that mad at her. And remember, people would be like, "Oh my, fuck her!" This and I was like, "Well, you know, I kind of got what I deserved. I know that I was completely disconnected in the relationship. You know, she would go off and she was she was like a model for like pre-corps and stuff like that, mm-hmm. and she used to travel to like the Europa and all over. And I, go do your thing. And she'd go 5 days. I wouldn't even talk to her or call her. Like, I was so into my work at the time and the relationship was kind of stale.
That's what I mean. You kind of left.
Right. Like, I checked out. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't a good partner. And so, yeah. So, you know what? She was on one of these trips and some fucking dude said the right thing while she was out drinking and doing a thing and they hooked up and whatever. Yeah. And so, not making an excuse for her, but I also own up the side that I played in that role, even though I didn't go out and go fuck somebody else. I checked out in the relationship.
Totally. So. And I get that. And so that's why, I'm not trying to pass too much. But here's something that I have a difficult time. I have a very, very difficult time having empathy for. The same friend of mine who's got a kid and one on the way now has pretty much checked out as a father. Now, that to me is very, very hard to have empathy and forgive. If you're a man or a woman, but more often this happens with men, and you skirt the responsibility of being there for your children, because now you're really impacting an innocent soul. You know what I mean? They're kids. Like, they didn't do anything to you. And you skirt that responsibility. It's hard to convince me that you're not a piece of shit. You know what I'm saying?
That's a tough one.
How do you try for a baby and then skirt the responsibility? Like, what?
That's
what
I'm saying. Yeah,
fuck that guy.
Yeah, fake. Yeah,
fuck that guy.
A child. And I think,
see, there's times for shame. Yeah, people forget about
throw
that.
Some shade on that.
Yeah, it's some shade.
That's
fuck that
that's
guy.
Yeah, some healthy shade, dude. Why, let you know that, like, nah, we don't agree with that.
That's why I like you guys. You know what I mean? We connect over shaming people for the right stuff.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Make sure it's directed properly.
Anyway, speaking of our boys and brothers and all that stuff, so my brother cracked me up the other day. So we're at a big family function, and I told you guys how I convinced my brother to get the chili pad for his house, right? Told you guys about this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So he got one, and now him and his girlfriend use it. He got the dual-sided because his girl,
saves a lot of relationships, by the way. I'm sure of it.
So here's the thing I love about my brother and generally my family. My whole family generally tends to be this way. So he was a pain in the ass to convince, first off, because he's very frugal, even though the kid crushes it. He's an investment banker and he crushes it. He's still frugal with his money. And it was hard to convince him. But now that he's convinced, he's like the best chili pad salesman I've ever seen in my life.
He's like an evangelist.
Bro,
now, huh?
We were at my family function and he was like
a discount code.
He was selling my aunts, my uncles, my cousins. He was doing presentations. You don't understand how great the whole freaking party. And I gotta remember to get my brother.
I'm the same way too though, right? Yeah. Like if something
you get excited.
Yeah, I get excited about something, right? especially to his point where if you're you were really hesitant and I'm skeptical, and then you're convinced, like your paradigm shattered. Oh man, then I become evangelizing it everywhere.
It was funny listening to him like sell it to the different people because the way he would sell it would be different.
Yeah,
like he's talking to my grandparents and he's like, I sleep so soft. I don't have any stiffness when I wake up. Then he's talking to my cousins. He's like, I think I'm getting stronger in the gym.
Wow.
I'm like, what?
It just accelerates.
Yeah, dude. I'm like, this is so funny.
But dude, that's how it is when you're like, I can't believe I've been doing it like without this for so long. Yeah, and it dawns on you that a product or something like that existed and it could have been used that whole time.
You know what it's necessary for? Memory foam. Mattresses, memory foam mattresses. They don't tell you this when you get them. Yes, they're comfortable, but they also are warm. Heat generators.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Like they absorb and reflect your heat.
Dude, I radiate heat so much. So it just to have it kind of regulate that temperature is everything, man.
It's cool for wintertime right now too. Heating it up.
Are you using it because you got the baby in bed too? Right.
I'm not using it right now because I'm not in the bed. I'm so Katrina is using it.
I just picture Maximus on your side of the bed, just chilling.
Did I tell you?
I finally kicked him out.
Did I tell you guys what happened? So I bought my first online mattress. Never bought a mattress like that before. By the way, we're not sponsored by this company at all.
Sight unseen.
I did all my research, right? Yeah. So I get online and checked all the. I mean, isn't that how you buy everything now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Read the reviews.
It's so. Katrina makes fun of me for doing this, and I think it's funny that she thinks that's silly that the how accurate reviews are. It's like maybe when that shit first started, it wasn't very accurate, but now you've got tens of thousands of people that have reviewed products, and if it's, you know, 4.5 plus stars on something with 10,000 plus
and
reviews,
read them. People are honest. Right. They'll take pictures. They'll write about it.
Read the really good one. Read the really bad one. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, and there's like, a website. There's a website that'll actually
verify that.
Rate the reviews and will tell you, oh, 75% of these seem real.
Right. Yeah. And every, I'm sure every company has 100 family members that they get on there and 5-star everything like that. But you know, you got 10,000 plus reviews on there that are,
you can trust them.
Right. And you can, and then, and the one, and the, I always like to read the negative ones, right? Because if the negative one isn't like negative enough for me to like, you know, I really didn't like the shape of it. It's a little like a, you know, I'm like, fuck, I don't give a shit about that. I want to know how comfortable it is.
This one gave my wife cancer. Then you don't get it.
Yeah, right.
You're like, whoa.
But I because I've been sleeping in the guest room, I felt so bad. So I have family that come over a lot. My sister stays every month right now and sees Maximus. When we travel, we always have somebody house sit and watch the boys inside the house. And man, I called both my uncle and my sister, who probably stay the most in our guest room, and I apologized. I was like, oh, I'm so sorry that you were sleeping on that fucking mattress. I cannot believe that we did that to you. Like, and it was just that, and I think I can't be alone.
Was it an old mattress?
Yeah. It's everybody does this, right? You move into a new house, and you've got an extra room, and you have the other the bed that you've had that was...
That's the afterthought.
Oh, yeah. This bed's been, like, passed down, and like when I finally, like, where did this come from, right? Because it wasn't mine. It was Katrina.
It slopes in the middle. It's like a hammock.
She's like, oh, my mom gave it to me, and it came for my brother who had it for, like, 20 years. It's, like, 30 years old.
Oh,
you know?
Geez.
Yeah, you could feel the springs in it and everything like that. It's like, oh, my God. And they used to throw this little foam thing over it, so it kind of like disguised how shitty it was, and we didn't have that anymore, and I was like so uncomfortable, and I finally just I said fuck it, that's it. I bought a hella nice mattress. I got this company called Puffy, which by the way we're not
are they sponsored. The ones that fold.
Yeah, they come in a box.
Yeah, I have a. I bought one that from a different company that does.
Yeah,
that. Yeah, it's weird, right? You open the box and you're like,
I got a Casper one. Like
and
that.
Boy, was it comfortable.
Now is it memory foam or
it's like I have there's levels to it, right? Doug could pull up the website. We wanted Puffy mattresses is what it's called. And again, they're getting like a free commercial from us.
I know, we're not even sponsored.
No. I reached out, but I was like, I can't wait. Like I said, fuck it, I just paid for the thing. Yeah, that's what it looks like right there. And there's like
Dude,
they have three levels, right? So of course I got the crazy one.
Yeah.
And it's
you got the ludicrous speed one.
Yes, ludicrous speed. It's like sleeping on a fucking cloud.
Is it really?
Oh, it's amazing.
So the online mattress market is massive.
Yeah.
Now, when it first started, and I want to say it was Casper. I think it was Casper that was the first mattress.
That was the disruptor.
Yeah, and it did that. It came in a box, right?
Little the boxes, too.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And Casper did that. That was the first one. Yeah. But I remember when they first came out, other people and companies laughed at them. Like, nobody's going to buy a mattress online. People want to try it out.
They have to come to our store and lay on them.
But, dude,
and
it's become a massive competitor.
No, for sure. I would have never done this 10 years ago. But again, because reviews are so reliable now, and I could go through and someone be like, oh, I was on a Chatham and Wells for this many years, and now I got this, and it's amazing. I'm like, oh, fuck, that's a badass bed. Mm-hmm. And you say this is better? Like, so, you know, you start to read enough of things like that, like, okay, I'm willing to take a risk on it.
Do you know who makes a decent – you know what kind of salesperson used to? I don't know if it still works like this anymore, but they used to make a lot of money. Mattress salesman.
A lot.
Oh, yeah.
Like the markup a decent is amount. Massive.
Dude, you remember the mattress wars?
The markup
there was wars.
Is
dude, I had a guy that worked apparently. For me and he sold memberships and then he got fired because he's an idiot. And then he went to go sell mattresses and this guy used to send me.
I know who you're talking about.
You know exactly what
I bought a mattress from him.
Did you?
I did.
Yeah. He used to send me.
It was always like President's Weekend and like, you know, those like 3-day weekends.
He used to take pictures of his paycheck. No, he would scan his paycheck. It was back in the day. And
Mancini's.
Fax me. Yeah, he'd fax me copies of his paycheck just to talk shit because he got fired. Like, look how much I'm making. And this guy was making like $10,000 every couple weeks, you know, or a few weeks.
They made big money. The markup is like more than double, dude.
Yeah.
So you see a mattress for like $5,000-$7,000.
You could get that thing way down if you want.
Way down. Yeah. I mean, he could drop a few thousand off and still make his commission of like $1,000 off of it.
Oh, it's insane. But it's crazy, that market.
But because of that, it's now become competitive for like companies like this. Like, you know,
because you could get a nice mattress for way less.
Oh, yeah. Like, you could have got which I imagine even the, you know, this thing had three tiers. The cheapest level for the king was I want to say like $800. Yeah, I mean, I bought the $1,800 one. That's like really nice, but that's
nothing.
Oh no, I paid $10,000 for my bed my badass bed.
Hold on a second. You spent $10,000?
Yeah, Chatham & Wells handcrafted bed. That was the shit back then. Like now, it's not even that company doesn't even exist anymore.
Bro,
the Cadillac of beds.
Bro,
it was. It made love to me, bro. It did.
Oh, you spent $10,000 on a bed?
Made love to me.
Oh my god.
It cuddled you into the nethers.
Oh, huh? For a bachelor, bro, that was a game changer. You come into my house as a bachelor, it was all clean, it was all nice, and then you sat on my bed, it was game over.
I think if a girl comes over and sits on your bed, no matter what,
it's game over.
That's probably a game over.
No, it's for sure.
That's hilarious.
I don't know if I was a chick and I came over to some bachelor's house and I sat on like some fucking futon. I'm out of here.
See, if any of us had a rotating bed, I feel like it has to be Adam.
Rotating?
Right?
Do you remember old hotels? The beds would have a little quarter thing next to it.
Whoa, bro, that's hella old. That's before Justin and I's time.
That's only like 3 years older than you guys. You know what? You know, one thing that I look out for now that I had zero awareness about back in the day was the chemicals and fumes that mattresses give off.
Yeah.
That's like a thing. You know that, right?
There's all kinds of toxic chemicals.
Yeah, because you'll buy a bed, you'll smell it, and like you're sleeping on it, you know? So now they make these organic beds and made out of organic latex and all this other stuff.
Yeah, that'll be an emerging market for sure.
It already is. It's already a growing market. Anyway, dude, that article on Walmart.
Crazy, right?
Holy.
Look out.
Brilliant.
Good time to buy. $115.
Yeah,
115 is where the stock's at, so it's reasonable.
Are they at 115 right now?
Yeah, I'm unaware. What was the article?
So check this out. So and they've been talking about this for a while, so we'll see what happens and how this plays out. But everybody's always said if there's anybody that has a chance to rival Amazon and the momentum that Amazon has, it's Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
And Walmart has 4,700 locations in the United States. Basically, they're
the largest employer.
There is a Walmart within 10 miles of everybody.
Yeah.
So that's how, I mean, and Amazon has 110 warehouses for distribution. So that, I mean, the way they get to you the next day with Prime and everything like that is because they got 100 and something warehouses all over the United States. Walmart is taking 4,700 of their locations. They're taking 1,600 of their 4,700 locations and are turning them into distribution warehouses.
Yep.
Boom. And they're going to make a run.
And they have their own cloud, so they don't have to rely on Amazon's cloud.
Right.
So now you buy something on Walmart. Because here's the thing that Walmart has that is amazing. Their distribution channels, their ability to deliver, their locations, they are superior to Amazon. In fact, I forgot what natural disaster it was. Can't remember what it was. It was a huge natural. It might have been Hurricane Katrina, where people couldn't get water. Walmart stepped in and was able to do it.
Now, is this just nationally, or are they internationally that prevalent?
They are international, but nationally for sure.
Yeah.
And so, what does this mean? This means that maybe Walmart can get to the point where they can deliver to you within hours.
Right.
And they do that, and Amazon's dead.
Well, I wouldn't. Careful.
Bro,
we're talking about
business. Bro, if you could buy, hold on a second. If you could buy products.
Have you seen him lately? Jacked.
If you could buy products for competitive prices to Amazon, and the only difference is I buy it on Walmart, I get it here in a few hours versus I get it here tomorrow. That's a game changer.
Well, they do that. Amazon Prime does that.
Not on most products.
Well, so you're assuming that Walmart will be able to do that with most. I doubt they're going to be able to do it with most. They'll be competitive still. I think it'll just be amazing if they stay alive.
Mm.
I mean, Amazon is on a rampage of just putting companies out of business, and the only reason why I think Walmart's been able to survive is because of how big it is and because they've been able to sustain all this. And during the times when the economy was really bad, Walmart was on the rise because of how cheap it is to go buy things. So everybody that was spending extra money before was heading over there. So they definitely managed during this time. And because they're so big, they do have a chance. But I would never say that Walmart has a chance of putting Amazon out.
Well,
don't forget, Amazon doesn't charge, so I don't know what Walmart's what it will look like for them.
Like if they have like a but Prime Amazon deal.
Amazon, part of why Amazon's so amazing, aside from that it can come the same day or the next day, is also you don't pay
if you have Prime
for shipping. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
If you have Prime. Walmart will have to do that also if you're going to compete. So you're gonna be able to get it there as fast, and you're also going to not have to pay.
Well, look here, okay. Amazon, as of 2018, their total revenue was $232 billion. I have right here. In Walmart in 2018 was $500 billion. In 2019, it says $514 billion. They're extremely profitable, and they're still growing. So Walmart is the monster. So if anybody is going to go up to Amazon and have the potential to, you know, knock them down a little bit, it's Walmart. I can't think of any other company that could even come close.
There's not. They would gobble up anybody else. It's going to be.
I think they're a good buy. And
I do too. I think at $115 a share,
they also pay dividends. So if you buy Walmart stock, if I'm not mistaken, okay, I'm not an investor, so there's your disclaimer. I'm a trainer, but I'm pretty sure.
And we're wrong sometimes.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure.
We talk outside our lanes.
When you buy Walmart stock, you get paid dividends, so it's one of those stock that's not super volatile. You buy it, you actually get income every single year. So it's like an income producing stock. It's not just speculating on the price of it. So it makes it a good. Amazon is very expensive.
Is Walmart still the leader in organic?
Yes.
Produce, which is that's interesting too.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I'd never assume that.
It's their sheer size.
Yeah, they are massive.
You know, speaking of Bezos, you know that he donated $1 million to the fires.
Where?
In Australia.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah.
He found that under the couch.
Well, okay. You know what I mean? So
he's so rich, he just looked on the
funny
couch.
You say that. Funny you say that, because why I was bringing it up was because he got a lot of shit for that. Because
he only donated?
Yes. How do you feel about that?
I think that's a stupid.
I do too.
You're such an asshole if you shame him
for that.
Yeah. Like, okay, fine. He's got a lot of money, but he also didn't have to do anything. Yeah. It's like, here's your example. I'll give you an example.
Explain that. So he got shit for donating money?
So, okay, Bezos makes so much money. Okay, you can mathematically break it down, okay, by the minute, right, what he's making.
Yeah.
And $1 million is like 1 minute of work, right, or a couple minutes of work for him. So the idea of him throwing $1 million at a huge problem like the fires in Australia is a lot of people got online and were like hammering him over it because it's chump change to
him.
That's
such an asinine way of looking
at it. It is, and these are angry.
Okay, there it is. Look at that. Per hour, he makes a whopping $8,961.
Wow, $8 million every hour. That's crazy.
How is that even possible?
So in other words, he like hooked him up with like 5 minutes of work.
Yeah. Okay, here's the deal. And let me put it in perspective for people.
I agree with you.
Number one, you are a jealous, insecure, probably virtue signaling person, because I would like to see how many of these people who complained donated themselves. Probably none of them, right? They all sit around, you know, talking all this shit, but they have way more money than a lot of poor people do in the world. Number two, imagine, let's say you made, what's the average person in the U.S. make per hour? I don't know. What is it? What's the average salary? 50,000 a year? 60,000? So what are you making? You know, what is that per hour? 30 bucks? Someone do the math for me.
Yeah.
Anyway, imagine
I'm
you
not
make
your guy.
Yeah, whatever. Okay, fine, whatever. You're making 50, 60 grand a year, average person. You see a homeless person outside of the grocery store. You give him $1. He looks at you and complains to you and says you're a piece of shit for getting
how
$1.
How dare you?
Yeah, how would you feel?
Where's my 30 bucks?
Like, fuck you, man. I just gave you $1.
Right.
I didn't have to give you anything.
Yeah, no. I agree. That's why I thought it was an interesting conversation because I thought this is funny that people are getting pissed off that somebody actually gave money without knowing everything else. Mm. So that's stuff. You know, another one that's stirred up controversy right now is Nike. So this is something totally different though.
So I brought up something totally different a while ago.
They are talking about banning a shoe. So
why?
Of their own shoe?
They're not banning a shoe. Like a shoe is going to be banned from certain sports, like running. So for example,
is the Olympic Committee
gonna it's Vapor Fly is the type of shoe. And you guys have seen these before. Taylor used to rock these. He's got them. They have the kind of the big foamy soles. They're a running shoe. Mm. And they have this technology inside the foam that is kind of springs you forward. And so here they are right there.
It captures kinetic energy and somehow uses it again and springs it back.
Yes.
Wow. So Nike's record-breaking Vaporfly.
Yes.
That's the one that they're going to ban. And it's the organizations that do like world championships with marathons and stuff.
So a little performance enhancement.
Wow. You are about to sell more shoes than you've ever sold in your whole life.
Oh, yeah.
Just like the Jordan shoe, right?
Right. That's amazing for them. But now what do you guys think of organizations banning that? Because it's a, like a performance dance. What's your thoughts?
Well,
I have a thought. I want to hear what you guys
so
think.
Here's what I, first off, here's what I think. I think it's great because it confirms all my childhood beliefs and shoes. You know, when I was a kid, I go to the store with my mom. I was like testing out the shoes, see how fast they are. And then when I got older, I'm like, they don't make you faster. But apparently they do.
All of a sudden, they're magical at that point for you in your mind.
Yeah, apparently they do.
So thoughts on the ban?
I mean, look, they banned, there was a swimsuit that was banned in the Olympics at one point because it was, you know, making people break records. They're just trying to stay ahead of the technology. But what sucks is the guys who, there was the world record setting run was set in those shoes I read. So the guy who broke the world record.
Well, why not leave it open for everybody to use it?
So I'm on your page, Justin.
Yeah.
And here's why. Okay.
Because everybody's gonna use it,
and that
creates a new market.
It does, and it's fair. It's not like the shoe's unaffordable, and only certain people can have it.
It's not exclusive.
We can go run down right now and buy a pair of these. Okay, so every runner that's competing can go out and get a purchase. And hey, kudos to Nike for coming out with the technology.
They're innovating.
And I remember when I watched that TED Talk that completely shattered my paradigm about
the 1 minute mile.
About the evolution of sports and all the records that we've seen broken over the last 30 years. Now,
and they give most of the credit to technology.
Yes, tracks and shoes. Yeah, I would have said if you would have asked me, I would have bet my bankroll that it had to do with steroids and all that
and training.
Yes, and nutrition, all that. No, and almost everything was attributed to the evolution of technology with gear, with
the track,
the swimsuits, the caps, the shoes, the track, the courts, the pool, even how the water comes out of the pool for swimmers. Like all that stuff is what has evolved us in sports so much. So this is no different to me. This is no different than a better track, a better swimsuit cap, a better pool.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. Yeah.
So and anybody can go buy it and purchase it and use it. So why the fuck not let it happen?
If I was in charge of Nike and that news came out, I would have thrown the biggest celebration of all time. Can't think of better. There is no better the advertising than your shoe getting banned because it makes you too fast.
Do you know the first big example of something like that?
No.
The Jordan 1s.
Wait, did
Jordan 1s.
They got banned because they were too effective?
No. That's not why they got banned.
Oh, okay.
They got banned because they were red. So the NBA would not allow them. But the way they marketed it was that they were too good,
too
right?
Good, too hot for everybody else to use.
Too hot for NBA. Yeah, and so every fucking kid ran out. But that's what blew up the first
Now,
Jordan.
Where do you draw the line? Like, for example, in baseball, you know, aluminum bats or juiced balls or
those cameras now, they're catching them.
Yeah, because at some point, technology is going to get really crazy. At some point, you might have nanotechnology on your shoes that springs every time you take a step.
I guess you got to keep up, man.
You know, I mean, who knows? Yeah, just keep wearing better technology.
Just keep up, man. They got that. We got that.
Hover shoes, you know?
Yeah.
You just flying across the finish line.
You bring up a good point. Yeah.
They have to draw the line somewhere.
I agree. I don't think this is where you draw it, though. Some fucking foamy shoes. Okay, come on, get out of here with
that. Well, what they did, the way it worked was they effectively banned the shoe, but really what it was is they made a rule on how thick the sole had to be. So that effectively banned the Nike Vaporfly or whatever.
Yeah.
But it wasn't specifically to ban that shoe. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They made a new rule that
It was.
But the way they wrote it in the rule book.
Right, of course. But I mean, so someone figured that out. I mean, that's awesome. I think it's awesome that somebody figured out that, okay, if we put this type of foam in there, we add some carbon in there, we make it a millimeter thicker, we're going to get this much more propulsion that could shave, you know, 1/100th of a second off of, you know, I mean, fuck.
Is that swimsuit still the case, like, for the Olympics? Like, do they still, like, ban, like, certain types of, like, really tight, like, swimsuits that keep everything super aerodynamic?
Yeah, what it was, I think it was like a swimsuit that was like pants. It was like spandex pants.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't just the Speedo.
Yeah.
And it was the design of the swimsuit that reduced drag.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. I remember, Adam, when you were going through your swimming kick, and you were talking about how when you're doing freestyle, for example, the legs, you're basically not doing very much. You're pulling them.
Right.
And so it makes perfect sense, right?
Oh,
the more you can make your legs glide through the water, the faster.
Or even like a swimsuit that allows you to float a little bit would make a big difference.
Yeah, oh, yeah. For sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So a little floaty.
Yeah, so yeah, if it gives you a little bit of float.
You up a little, all you got to do is just pull your body basically. Yeah. The other side.
No, you're right. I mean, there has to be some sort of someone has to draw the line somewhere or else you just, who makes.
Like webbed gloves.
What happens when someone makes, you know, rocket shoes, you know what I'm saying?
And well, like, I mean.
well, you start adding like engines and shit. It's like, come on.
I would like to see a sporting event with equipment is kind of like limited, but they allow them to take whatever drugs they want. Let's see how hard we can push the ball.
Murder ball.
Yeah. Let's see what happens.
I mean, I agree too. The truth is
no drugs banned.
Nobody's watching the drug free one. I mean, that's like, I've talked about that with football, right? Like we've talked about like what do you do? Like steroids are so rampant. How do you pull back on it?
It's too late.
Yeah, it's too late, right? So what do you potentially open up a league that is completely drug tested, no drugs whatsoever? They're super strict on it. But the reality of it and why they would never do that is because no one would watch
it.
Haven't we sort of seen an example of that with like Pride versus the UFC and like how it was like, it was understood that like it wasn't against the rules, but they didn't like necessarily put it in the rules that it was allowed.
I remember when Wanderlei Silva, who was murdering people in Pride, went to the UFC and he's like, oh, he lost like 20 pounds. What happened? Yeah. Or what's his name?
Tiny.
What's his name? Kickboxer, Dutch, dude with the kind of spiky hair. He still fights.
Oh, yeah.
He was jacked in Pride. Then he fights in UFC and he's, God, what is his name? You guys know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
right?
I know who you're talking
about. I do too.
Yeah.
Crow Cop?
No, not Crow Cop. Although he got smaller too.
No, I know who you're talking about.
You know exactly who I'm talking about. I'll come up with the name in just a second. Anyway, I read a crazy article the other day. You guys want to freak out a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So scientists have created the first living robots.
Okay, now explain that.
Okay.
Define.
Define living.
So a team of researchers took cells from frog embryos and turned them into a machine that can be programmed to work as they wish.
A programmed living being.
So they literally took cells, put them together, and programmed them to do what they want. So it's a organic, carbon-based machine. It's a robot, in essence.
Okay, now what's scarier?
Yeah.
Right? Like a biological programmed thing or
a
mechanical, metal thing.
Yes, they were very, very small, so it doesn't look like anything cool or crazy or whatever. But here's what the article says. They could dispatch the tiny xenobots to transport medicine around a patient's
xenobots
body.
Xenobots, assemble!
Or clean up pollution from the oceans. Oh, they can also heal themselves if they're damaged.
They look like space bears.
Yeah. No.
Oh, more space bears.
Remember the space?
I can't even remember the name now of the animal because
yes.
Space, yeah. What was they called? What are they called? Bear? They're not. They're called
space bears.
They're water bears.
Water bears.
But they have another.
Apparently, they're on the moon.
Damn, you're screwing me up, dude.
But it looks like them, doesn't it?
It does.
These things are tiny.
But dude, it's
so they're starting on the cellular level.
Yes, and they take the cells, they put them together, and they program them.
Dude.
So they do what they want.
But you know what that means.
And I tell you what. Here's what I love about sci-fi. Sci-fi
means a lot of cool sci-fi movies.
Apparently,
coming.
There needs to be more sci-fi movies because it's a warning. Yeah. Like, stop playing God, you dumbasses.
Yeah. Water bear, tardigrade. Tardigrades.
Yeah. Water bears.
Thank you. Not space.
They do look like little bears.
Not space. When you say space bears, I imagine like a bear in like a spacesuit with a laser.
Speaking of animals, this is way less scary than that. I thought it was actually pretty cool. But like, I was talking to my sister-in-law actually, like when we were up in Tahoe, and she was like, "Tell me about one of her clients that she had that was actually a part of the process of military training for animals, like say a bottlenose dolphin or a sea lion in the Navy." And like they use them and they teach them how to basically look for like invading like divers and look for like mines and look for like all kinds of stuff on ships.
Now, that's been happening for a long time, right?
Yeah.
So in World War II, there were plans. And then in the Cold War, they even examined this. In the Cold War, we examined all kinds of crazy shit. But in World War II, there were plans to – they would put birds in planes, in the nose of the plane – and then they would the birds were trained to peck at a ship. So they'd launch these planes, fill them up with bombs. then the bird would peck at this image of the ship, and as the camera moved, they'd peck at it, and that essentially guided the plane. So it was a heat-seeking plane in World War II.
Whoa, explain this again. Okay, so there's birds in the nose of the plane.
There was something in the plane where the bird was trained to peck at the ship. So they'd look through the window, they'd peck at the ship, but their pecking directed the plane, and it would become like a guided missile. So they'd launch these planes, the bird would peck at the thing, and then if the plane went too high, the bird pecked down because there's the ship, and boom, they'd aim right at it and just blow up ships.
What's the idea behind that? Because the bird's hell? Perception of like...
It's looking. Birds have great vision.
That's what I'm saying. Okay.
So they're literally guiding the plane to crash into...
Were these manned planes?
No. Why would they do that?
What are we talking about here? Okay. Kamikaze?
That's why I was confused.
Like no, there's no people on there. So the birds would do this.
Okay.
And then bottleneck dolphins, they've been training for a long time to find ocean.
So the beluga whale as well. Did you hear about that with Russia? How they were like messing with them. So they, same thing. Like they were looking for like mines, all these kinds of things. But they also trained them to kill potential like divers and people in the water. Like they would kill their enemies.
Wow,
like,
dude.
Getting whales to kill people.
This is like
what the hell's going on?
Yeah, it's like the comic book. What's his name?
Leave it to the Russians though.
Oh, here's it. So pigeon guided missiles. This was in World War II. And then you know what else they did? They were going to strap incendiary like bombs or little tiny bombs on bats. They were going to This was World War II. They were going to release hundreds of thousands of bats over Japan.
Yeah.
Then the bats, because what bats, he's called bat bomb. And what bats do
fucking bat bombs,
is
dude.
Bats.
That's badass.
Bats, they find like underhangs. They go underneath like the roofs of homes and stuff. And the way that the Japanese homes were constructed would have been perfect. So we'd release thousands of bats. They've got these little bombs strapped to them. They go and they hide. Bomb. They hide underneath the house, and everything catches fire.
That's brilliant because nobody gives a shit if you kill a bat.
Yeah. They're ugly as hell.
Like I'm concerned about dolphins, right? Like so, you strap a couple dolphins up with some like rockets and shit, and then they die. No. You know people are gonna be fucking. PETA's gonna be all over your ass. Yeah, but you kill some bats on the way to winning a war.
You would have put a rocket.
Those are flying rats.
You put a torpedo maybe, but a rocket on a dolphin. Doesn't sound very. It's made for
rocket
water.
Dolphin.
Yeah, dolphins are made for water.
It's just like.
We have underwater rockets, bro. You could do that.
That scientist got fired. Yeah. We designed a space missile.
Same guy who put the screen door in the submarine.
By a fish.
You got an idea. Let's put bears on the moon.
That's
great. Yeah, good job, Johnson.
Anyway, so I was reading this article on CPR. So you guys know what CPR is, right? Cardiorespiratory, cardiopulmonary.
Right. Where I don't know what the hell they don't even breathe into your mouth anymore. Now the protocol is just doing the compressions.
Yeah, what's up with that? I've taken a CPR certification probably 100 times.
Well, I mean,
call them STDs, man.
I guess.
Look at
that's the main importance.
Thank you, Doug.
Bro, that's a video game.
Thank you for getting my back there.
Yeah, that's a video game.
Rocket dolphins.
Yeah. you see one just exploding.
What an ineffective weapon.
Oh.
Terrible.
Wow.
Anyway, so I'm reading this article on CPR and
look at that one. I'm sorry,
messing
dude.
Everybody
oh,
up.
You got me on that one, Doug.
And this is crazy now. So statistically speaking, or percentage wise, a woman who needs CPR in public is a lot less likely to receive it than a man. So if a woman goes down and she's like, whatever, and oh my God, she's not breathing, somebody needs to give her CPR, less likely than if it's a guy.
Did they say why?
Well I can guess why.
Because like, you don't want to be a perv about it.
That's 100%. That's right.
Where do I put my hands?
People are men are so afraid of inappropriately touching a woman or having people think that that's what's happening, that they're less likely to get CPR.
It's so crazy. And there's been like lawsuits and things for people, like they had to actually create a law for that, right? Like the Good Samaritan law, I think.
Yeah,
where it's like people have helped people in the past and then get sued later. And it's like, dude, what the fuck is wrong with people?
Yeah, it says that they're also more likely to die as a result from it. That's pretty crazy. Men are 1.23 times more likely to get CPR from a bystander than women.
Well, isn't the survival rate of CPR really low anyways? Like if someone were
it's better than zero.
No, you're right. Of course.
You know? Have you guys ever had an incident like that where you've had to like apply emergency help?
Almost. I almost had to do CPR. Somebody went down in the gym and they passed out, which happens a lot. So you don't freak out initially when someone passes out because it happens at least, I don't know, every other month. So of course, people say, oh my God, so-and-so passed out. So you walk over there, and the first thing you do is you check to see if they're breathing and, check to see if they have a pulse. And this person had neither. Yeah. And so I'm like, call 911, and I'm like, I'm going to do CPR. So we're checking.
Look at you, protocol and everything.
Now we're checking to make
you,
sure.
Go call 911.
Yeah. The training kicked in.
Yeah, of course, dude. Of course, what a great opportunity!
Your health ambassadors here,
health ambassador.
You know, Sal DiStefano, at your service.
You know, it's personal training I would have sold right after that. Yeah. Oh, by the way, I'm the trainer that saved somebody 50% off. Anyway,
you call 911.
Anyway, so they called 911 and we're checking the pulse, making sure that there isn't one. And then I think there's a pulse. I think they're breathing. By the time we are because you got to be sure. You don't want to go and do CPR on someone who's got a pulse and stuff.
Right.
So while we're checking, now remember the 24 that was on Santa Teresa is across the street from the hospital. Right. The ambulance got there so fast. By the time I was ready to start doing CPR, they run in the room and I was like, oh, thank goodness.
Yeah, I haven't had that. But I did have an incident though when I was at this restaurant where a lady outside, it was so crazy because like out of the corner of my eye, I could just see, you just noticed something that's off and like she was up and kind of like looked pale and was like kind of doing the universal choking sign. And I just like immediately just beelined it over there, just not even thinking. And nobody around there was doing anything. She's like, holding herself. And so, I had to do that, the maneuver,
the
from
Heimlich
the back,
maneuver?
Heimlich. And then, like, thankfully, it didn't take too many because, like, sometimes I guess I've heard people have had to break ribs and have really had to smash
did
in there.
Did it work?
It worked. Yeah.
She spit it out?
Popped it out. And then it was so weird because I don't remember anything after that. Like, I got more emotionally involved in this whole thing. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh my God, this lady's going to die. Like, in my head, I thought she was going to die. Mm-hmm. And so that I had to go sit in the cooler for like an hour after that. I was so amped.
Wow.
Yeah. Speaking of restaurants, since Taco Bell's a super fancy restaurant, did you
restaurant?
That was the best transition I could come up with, that one right there.
That's good.
Did you see what the Taco Bell announced as far as raising their general managers up to? No. I thought this was kind
of
neat.
So a general manager at Taco Bell, somebody who manages one location.
Correct.
Okay.
$100K a year.
What?
Hey,
right?
You make six
viable
figures
career
to manage a
you
Taco
do,
Bell?
You do now. It's new.
Wow.
Yeah. On average, countrywide, it used to be between 50 and 80 on the top tier. Now everybody is up to 100. They're moving.
Does that mean a bean burrito is now $2.50 instead of a dollar whatever?
No, I think it's a strategy that they're trying, which is interesting, and I'm really curious to watch, the talent pool has been declining in fast food management and everybody's been cutting and becoming more efficient and AI and all these things like that, that they're kind of going back to, let's see if we could actually get some really qualified, good people to come in here and run these facilities and make a difference. And, that's interesting, man. $100,000 a year to GM a Taco Bell. Now, mind you, I know, like, so I have a client of mine.
First of all, it's a lot of work, dude.
Yeah, yeah, no, I have a client of mine that
is a lot of work.
Right, right. They manage several million, like one location makes several million dollars a year, and you've got quite a few employees that manage probably somewhere between 30 plus employees, and you got a lot of moving parts, and you got food and all that shit. So I know that it's got to be kind of a nightmare, but still, $100K.
You know what this reminds me of? Do you remember the movie Demolition Man?
Yeah.
You remember the Taco Bell was the fancy restaurant in there? Oh, do you guys remember that?
I see. Sylvester Stallone.
Now that you say that,
right?
Yeah. Wesley Snipes.
Wesley Snipes.
That's actually a good movie.
Classic.
Yeah, it was a great. There was one thing in that movie that I wish they would really
Judge
invent.
Judge Dredd better.
That was terrible.
Yeah.
Remember when he crashed the car, and the car filled up with foam before, he was stuck in there?
Yeah,
I feel like a big cannoli.
We kind of do that with the bags now. Almost all your new cars now have airbags that shoot out of every which way and direction. It's getting super safe when it comes to that.
Yeah.
This quaz brought to you by Organifi. For those days you fall short on getting your organic veggies or whole food nutrition, Organifi fills the gap with laboratory-tested, certified organic superfoods to help give your health and performance the added edge. Try Organifi totally risk-free for 60 days by going to Organifi.com. That's Organifi.com. And use the coupon code MINDPUMP for 20% off at checkout.
First question is from Red Surf Bus. Is it better to drop a rep and increase weight by a larger amount or progress with smaller fractional plates?
Either. They're both good. Now here's the thing. Have you guys ever experimented with adding a quarter to a half pound in your workouts on an incremental slow basis? Mm-hmm. What was your guys' experience with that?
No, it's a very smart strategy. Most people don't have the patience to do it, but it's actually a great strategy.
I think that's the key there. It's like you have to be patient and you have to like be proactively like doing that. Like every workout, you're thinking about that. And like, I don't know, I went through a phase where I did that and it did, you know, pay off for me, but it felt like more of a struggle to do.
Now, the problem is that the plates that you get now, conventional plates, don't go lower than 2.5 pounds. So that means if you add one on each side, you're going up by 5 pounds, which sounds small, but it's still a substantial amount to go up. But at one point, I used to have these collars that you put on the sides of the bar, and the collars themselves weighed like, you know, half a pound or whatever. And so I'd go up by like a pound at a time. Mm. That really was actually quite remarkable. I got pretty good results by doing that. But anyway, to answer the question,
I think there's value both ways here.
Yeah, totally. Either way, you're adding weight, you're adding volume in the form of adding weight to your workouts. It's progressive resistance regardless of how you do it. Both ways have total value.
I think something like if I really got into like something like powerlifting, I would totally like apply this method like more and be more detailed, because I'm writing down like very specifically like each time I'm trying to progress, and I'm writing down my results and then what I've added on, you know, like even if it's fractional, I'm adding that on. So it totally adds up over time.
Mm-hmm. People always want us to tell them what is better, this or that. And
usually it's either
right,
or both.
It's almost always that, right? I'm trying to think of a case when it hasn't been. I mean, there's some examples, I guess, that are very obvious and extreme. But for the most part, like it's rarely ever an either or. It's, you know, it whichever one that you probably do most of the time, the other one is super beneficial at that point, because your body has got used to that and adapted to that. So doing something different is going to add more value. So, and both have value. So there's, and I think why this, and this is part of what annoys me about our space, is that, you know, you take something and you could separate this, right? We could totally separate these two things.
Create two camps immediately.
Right. We could do a study. We could go for 6 weeks and we could show this and control all these things and go like, oh, well, it looks like that the group A that incrementally went up, you know, gained, you know, 1% more strength than group B. Yeah. But the truth is, if group A continues on doing the same thing as group A forever, then switching things up and being group B would actually probably be the most beneficial thing. So, and that kind of falls suit, I think, with almost everything we discuss.
Now that being said, just to be completely honest, I don't know what this is, but I rarely ever add anything under 20 or 50 pounds on the bar when I want to go up. I just don't like adding small plates. Maybe it's an ego thing. I don't know.
I get caught up in that too. So I know we're not alone with that. It's just one of those things. You just kind of like pick your next amount, and sometimes 20, something. You just know how, you know, you can ramp it up based on the feeling of where you're at.
The smallest amount is 20 pounds, which is not small. That's a big jump.
Yeah, it is a big jump.
And what I do is I wait till my reps get high.
Yeah.
And then I say, oh, I can add 20 pounds, and I slap, you know, 20 pounds.
We used to say, so if for chest, back, and legs, okay, so your big muscle groups, like you're not allowed to do anything less than a quarter. That was like
was the only way.
Tens and fives were for arms, bro.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Like if somebody went out,
so
and
stupid.
Got, yeah, if somebody slid a 10 on a squat, we'd laugh at each other and be like,
pure,
you can't do
pure
that.
Ego.
No, that's but totally wrong.
But to be honest, it's smarter to incrementally add weight.
Sure.
You know, you don't necessarily. I mean, I never did with clients. I never trained clients where I'm like, oh, looks like you're stronger, let's add 50 pounds. Like, I never did that. I did that to myself because, you know, as a trainer, I train other people better than I train myself. So, but yeah, either one can definitely have value. Do the one that you haven't been doing. So if you tend to add larger amounts, go to the fractional adding of the weight. If you tend to do the fractional one, which is probably more rare, then I'd say go the other direction.
All right, next question is from Caffeine and Counseling. If someone is having a hard time losing body fat, how do they determine if it's due to a slow metabolism or just overeating?
Okay, so first of all, if you are gaining weight or not burning body fat, you are eating more than you're burning. So it's technically all overeating, okay? So let's get that out. Now, that being said, okay, can you change the energy balance by speeding up your metabolism. In other words, can you get your body to burn more calories on its own by using certain strategies to speed up your metabolism? Yes, you can. So I want to be clear there, because you only gain body fat if you're eating more calories than you're burning. Now, if you're not burning very many calories, it doesn't take much to do that, but you're still eating more than you're burning. The strategies to getting your metabolism to speed up all include lifting weights, all of them. Now, there's other things you can do. Get good sleep. You can, you know, slowly increase your calories over time. That tends to speed up the metabolism a little bit. But you lift weights always, and because lifting weights tells the body to build muscle. It also sends a signal to the body, and this is something that we've never really talked too much about on the podcast. It actually tells your body to become less efficient with calories. Mm-hmm. We see this, and it's interesting. When you look at studies, you find that the body becomes less – in other words, it doesn't conserve calories quite as much. It burns more through heat because it doesn't feel like it needs to. Resistance training tends to promote that. So when you look at somebody who gains a pound of muscle but they're burning 500 more calories a day, 1 pound of muscle – you know, on its face isn't burning 500 more calories. But the signal that told the body to build that pound of muscle does tell the body to become less efficient with calories, which causes a faster metabolism.
Well, wouldn't you first want to look at, you know, if you're overeating? I mean, that would just make the most sense before you go into like, well, I have a slow metabolism, like, and go in that direction, just to really know very specifically, like, I've been tracking, I know what my maintenance is, I know that, you know, just by manipulating like this amount of calories up, you know, I could see how that affects my composition, and then, you know, sort of like go from there and then see, okay, obviously the weight training is going to have the best effect, you know, on your metabolism, and you're going to go in that direction, but at least assess that first.
Well, I mean, like Sal said, if you're putting on body fat, regardless if you are, your metabolism is slow, you think it's slow or not slow, you're overeating, right? So you're overeating for where your current metabolism is at. And really nobody knows the answer to whether it's slow to you or not. Like if you find yourself eating very low calorie and still putting body fat on, well then, and you're not satisfied with the calories you're consuming and you would like to eat more, well then sure, it's slow for you. It's slower than you would like it. So work towards building it up. But if you're putting body fat on just because you had a crazy day where you had 12 alcoholic drinks and swung by Taco Bell and had 20 tacos at the end of the night, and you put on some body fat afterwards like that because you ate 6,000 calories.
Don't blame it on your metabolism.
Right. It's not the metabolism's fault. But, I mean, you are the one that decides whether you think your metabolism is slow or not. If you're putting body fat on, you're overeating, regardless if that's 900 calories you're eating from that or it's – you know, 6,000 calories, you won't put body fat on unless you're over consuming them where your metabolic rate is
now. Here's where the value of tracking comes in, because 9 out of 10 people that I've ever worked with underestimate their calories. Okay. Almost every single time somebody will say, oh, I'm eating around this much, or I'm not eating too much. And then I have them track and be like, actually, you're eating 3,500 calories a day on average. Why? Because you had a couple low calorie days, but then Saturday and Sunday, you ate pizza and you went out and you did this and that. When we add it all up, it averages out to quite a bit. So track your food, see how many calories you're actually consuming. You may be surprised. You may be shocked. You may think you have a – I can't tell you how many times I had clients tell me they had slow metabolisms, but in reality, they just ate too much. They just ate a shitload of calories. I'm like, well, you're actually eating a lot more than you think.
Right.
Next question is from Alexandria. Is not eating right after I work out slowing down my progress?
Probably
not. You still picked all these macro questions, guy.
Hey, man. It has a workout component to it.
You talked all this shit and then you had to pick at all these macro questions.
No, I spread it out because I know you guys love talking about it. You know what I mean? I was like trying to include you guys. Like,
I could have handled an all training conversation today. It's okay.
Yeah. Not really. You're not really slowing down any progress. There's studies that show if you eat after your workout, it speeds up the, you know, part of the recovery process, which would be to replenish energy that you've expended in the muscles. That's part of the recovery process. But it really doesn't matter when you eat. If you eat later on, you still replenish those energy stores. Really, it only the only value in, that goes into eating right after you work out is if you plan on working out again later in the day.
Right.
And you need to replenish those energy stores.
I blame the bodybuilding community for this one. And this was something that I remember when I was
competing. Anabolic window.
Totally. And I remember when I was competing that this was like one of the easiest strategies I used to lean out. So like I would work towards building my metabolism up and consuming 5,000-6,000 calories, and then now it's time to cut for a show 6-8 weeks out or so, and I start coming the other direction. One of my favorite things to start to restrict calories is post workout. I just stopped eating that meal, and I would try and stretch myself for as long as I could until I was like, I gotta eat. It's been it's been a couple hours after my workout, and I want to eat. Who cares about this anabolic window that everybody hypes up like it's that important? What I know is that when I go into a workout, especially when I'm following a diet where I'm already eating on average a lower amount of calories, and then I go work out, I've completely depleted my glycogen stores. And if I'm still walking around, I go home from the workout, I shower, I'm doing things around
that. Now you're fat burning.
Right. My body is now going to switch over to metabolizing fat as a source of energy because I've already tapped into all my stored energy. So I used to look at it like, wow, this is a great opportunity for me to just stay busy, keep going through my day, restrict from eating for a couple more hours to maximize the fat burning.
But even that doesn't matter unless you're in a calorie deficit. If you're in a calorie deficit, then yeah, you're burning. If you're not, even if you wait after your workout, it doesn't make a big difference. It literally really doesn't matter unless you're working out multiple times a day and you need to replenish some energy to have another workout. Now, why is this something that's pushed so hard in the fitness space? Why is this something that I even believed?
Because they want you to take your product right then.
That's it. What they did is with very brilliant marketing is they ritualized the consumption of protein bars and protein shakes. And what they did is they said, hey, if you eat this right after your workout, you recover faster, build more muscle, you have to do it. Then they knew if they pressured that and pushed that, people would believe it and ritualize it, and they did. They sold way more products as a result of that false belief. But no, it's because again, post workout, you're far less likely to eat a home cooked meal. Yeah. More likely to have the shake that you saved.
You're right, though. I mean, the only time it's important is if because of you not eating right after you work out, you're missing your macro targets.
That's it.
Right. So if. And that's where I would say, yes, this has a lot of value.
Yeah, because you need to eat a little, you know.
Right. Like you, I mean, if your body needs 150 grams of protein every day, it needs 150 grams of protein, regardless if it's getting right after a workout or not. So if in my case, when I decided to start skipping that meal, you know, if that now all of a sudden I lose 30, 40 grams a day and I don't get that made up somewhere else in my meals, well, then yes, that could affect my progress. Mm-hmm. But, you know, all I would do is now my other 5 meals that I had the day, instead of having 6 ounces, I'm having 7 or 8 ounces of meat. And that would make up for that difference of now skipping that meal and not getting that protein right afterwards. The difference of missing that anabolic window is so negligible, it's not even worth, I think, paying any attention to it. And in fact, like I said, I found it right after a really hard workout, I'm not starving. Mm-hmm. It takes, personally myself, like it takes me a while to come down before I even want to eat. It was only in my early years of personal training and when I fell for that same myth where I used to like pound a shake right afterwards because I thought I had to get into this anabolic window. But I found for leaning out, it was like one of the best strategies was for me to
What about gut health? I know you guys like interviewed a specialist on this. In terms of like the timing of that, when right after you work out and your body's inflamed and then you're adding like certain types of food that might add to that like inflammation in excess.
Well, that's the irony. The irony is eating right after you work out could contribute to gut health issues because when you're working out and pushing yourself, you do get localized inflammation on the areas that you work out, but you also get the systemic rise in inflammation the whole body, including the gut. By the way, it's, you know, when you push yourself really hard and you throw up, or if you know it's part of your body doesn't want to do both, right? It wants to not have to digest while you're exerting yourself. So the gut gets inflamed along with the rest of the body. Now you're going to throw food at it or a shake at it. Inflammation increases the odds that you're going to get what's called intestinal hyperpermeability, meaning that food particles, protein particles, pass through the gut and the intestine when they shouldn't into the bloodstream.
Which makes them invaders.
Yeah, and your body, exactly. It reacts like it's a foreign invader, develops an immune response. And this may be why that protein shake that you've been having post-workout for the last 5 years all of a sudden gives you gas and diarrhea and other issues. You've developed an intolerance to it. You've actually trained your body to become intolerant to it by having it right after your hard workout.
Now, I remember when we discussed that, and I kind of afterwards, I remember digging into that because I found that very fascinating. And the likelihood of that is really small. Although, if you're somebody who trains like CrossFit or you train, excuse me, really high intense,
right,
different story. Your average person who works out in the gym that does a 60-minute MAPS workout or whatever, the intensity level of that, you're not getting you're not getting the effects right. of like.
But if you already have gut issues, probably not a good idea to eat.
Not ideal. And you're splitting hairs on the actual benefits that all the science supports of doing that for insulin spike reasons and all that bullshit.
Next question is from Romain Tyler. Since repetitive movement injuries are so common in the construction world, what kind of lower back work would you suggest to keep our back strong and healthy for years to come?
Now, when you look at the lower back, you look at the spine, the lumbar spine, it's not just the muscles of the lower back that support the spine. It's all the muscles that surround the spine, which include the muscles of the core, the obliques, internal obliques, the abs, the transverse abdominis, the muscles underneath both those, all the pelvic floor muscles, all the muscles that surround the lower back support the lumbar spine. So what should you do? You should do exercises that strengthen them through full ranges of motion. You should do exercises that strengthen them as they stabilize. So a good example, a simple exercise that helps you strengthen stabilization of the core would be like a plank or, you know, farmer walks is another good example. One arm farmer
hollow
walks.
Hollow body.
Yeah, hollow body. That's a great exercise. You want to do rotational movements with like cable chops, and then you want to do counter rotational movements. This is where you're resisting your body's ability to rotate. You want to really strengthen the entire the whole area surrounding the lumbar spine to help protect your spine.
Well, along those lines too, I'm going to give you some generic advice too because I've trained a lot of construction workers, and two areas that I tended to just spend a lot of time focusing on to help them. Hip mobility and training your abs and core. Obviously, core and abs it's the antagonist muscle to your low back, right? So it's what supports the low back. So if you have low back issues or you have a weak low back, strengthening the opposing side is going to be a great strategy. Period. So having strong core, strong abs is a must for somebody like this. And then, you know, a lot of times low back pain, people don't realize too, just it comes from the lack of mobility in the hips. And because the hips get so locked up and tight, it pulls on that low back because it's all interconnected. And so I found I had a lot of success when I got a client to really open up their hips by doing exercises like the 90-90 or like Doug's favorite, the Frogger, and doing moves like that that really promoted good hip mobility and then strengthening the core to support it. And then, of course, the things that the boys were alluding to, too, I think are very important to strengthen and have a strong back. But a lot of times the chronic pain that we feel, and this is near and dear to me, like the pain that was from my low back was more due to the lack of mobility that I had in my hips, and then it was then pulling on my low back and causing that. So
much like with the hip flexors, like that's one of those things you got to make sure while doing those types of exercises that we're stimulating, you know, the abdominals, the transverse abdominals. We're not, you know, overemphasizing the hip flexors, which are probably already, you know, in a shortened position and, you know, being overly, you know, like underutilized and not in an extended position very often.
Didn't you write a really good low back pain guide?
Yeah, we have one at mindpumpfree.com, and it talks about some of this stuff. Here's something else. Start to change the technique that you use at work. You know, I never did this as a trainer until I owned my own studio and I had a physical therapist that worked in there, and she was exceptional. I learned quite a bit from her. And I would see her training her clients who worked in, you know, these types of jobs. And she would definitely do the stuff I talked about earlier, strengthening the core, you know, stabilization exercises, counter rotation, all that kind of stuff. But then she would also work on their technique at work. And what she found was, or what I actually observed was, oftentimes their technique was bad because of what you said, poor mobility, poor, like here's an easy one, poor hamstring mobility. Okay. So If your hamstrings are really, really tight, every time you bend over, you're going to really round your lower back and your hips are going to be tucked underneath you.
Great point.
So she would work on their hamstring flexibility and mobility, and then their technique changed. Now when they bent over, it was more at the hips, less at the lumbar spine. So that's something else you can pay attention to. As far as pain relief is concerned or speeding up your ability to recover from lots of repetitive work, stretching after work makes a big difference. Sauna use can help, and red light therapy. Red light therapy on your low back will likely speed up the recovery process that's happening with those muscles. And with that, go to mindpumpfree.com and download all of our guides. There's including that low back guide that Adam referenced. You can also find all of us on Instagram. You can find Adam at mindpumpadam, Justin at mindpumpjustin, and me at Mind Pump Sal.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.